Recorded.
Hello, this is Lori Schulman. Welcome to, I think it's call number 5 for our drafting guidelines for good faith to remove board members. That's the annotated version of the title. So we're here post Hyderabad to talk about feedback we got from our draft in Hyderabad, and for me to give you some update on responses to queries that I had posed to the legal group. To talk about some comments that were made on our Google Doc. Hi, and then maybe to talk a little bit more about what comes next in drafting the guidelines, maybe even do a little drafting today if our trusty note-taker, Yvette, can follow along, maybe make the changes to the draft as we talk or make some notes, and then I can follow up and post something to the list. So I see we have 6 participating on the call. And there's a new name here, I see, unless that's Renalia, possibly. Lena Rahim? Lena, if you're not a person using, we know that's using a different name, welcome to the group. We're happy to have you. And we'll just get going. I wanted to let the group know that we did receive a response from the legal group regarding the potential conflict of interest. I had posed the question to our group whether or not we thought it might be a good idea to at least have on record whether or not an issue of conflict of interest has been vetted with ICANN Legal and perhaps with outside counsel. So I sent, and the reason being is that for guidelines to be acting in good faith to remove board members, would there be any potential conflict of interest if ICANN Legal, who in theory reports to the board, would then be looking at our document for legal sufficiency, could there be any kind of issue there? And ICANN Legal sent back to us a fairly a detailed response, which I thought was very good, and I agree with, at least initially. And the reasoning, they said no, that we really hadn't looked at a conflict of interest issue here. We don't really think there is one. We are ICANN Legal. We don't report to the board in the sense that we are direct reports. We have a fiduciary duty to the organization, so it's important that the organization guidelines make sense and are, you know, minimally required by California law, and we don't really see this as opening up any sort of Pandora's box should these guidelines be exercised, and internally ICANN Legal had say in the review. They've asked to look at our draft when we're done, which I think is very fair, because honestly, were I in their shoes, I probably would have given the same response, that as a legal department, I'm responsible to the greater whole. And while, you know, there's some in the community these days that are saying, well, the board is an entity, the organization's an entity, the community's an entity, in fact, were we to exercise this power, we would actually all be one entity. And the entity is ICANN as a whole, holistic ICANN, however you want to refer that. So I think I'm fine with that, but I wanted to ask anybody in the group if they feel differently. You know, if you think we need to push this a little further, I'm happy to do that. Or I had posted the actual response to the list a few weeks ago before Hyderabad. So, but if I'd like to hear what people have to say. Does it sound good to you, not so good to you? Okay, I'm hearing no.
I'm not in the Adobe, so can you put me on
your feet? Oh, sure, yes. Hi. Yes, please respond, sure. Because you're the only hand.
Great, thanks. First of all, hi, everyone. It's Thomas. I'm not in the Adobe. I'm just on audio, and I'm on the road, so I hope the background noise is not too bad. I think that I do agree with the response that I can legal gay, because if there's an issue with a director, or if a part of the community chooses to exercise a right that's given to the community under the rules for the empowered community, I guess that's something that ICANN Legal just needs to respect and use as a basis for its work for the greater whole, as you rightfully said. So I tend to agree with the assessment that they gave.
Thank you, Thomas. I wanted to ask, too, the response was signed by Samantha Eisner. She's the Associate General Counsel of ICANN. If you could scroll down, I think that's her name, Samantha Eisner. what I wanted to ask the group, what I would like to do is I would like to reach out to Samantha directly and ask her for some guidance, not in terms of a specific set of language, but one of the things that we talked about in Hyderabad was where we have this drafting conflict. And Alan Greenberg really explained it well, right? We have this issue where we agreed in Workstream 1 that basically a constituency group can petition for a board removal for any reason at any time for any cause, right? That it should be completely open. This is the issue that Robin Gross was really adamant about in her comments to the open meeting that we had in Hyderabad. I spoke to Robin privately afterwards, same thing. And I don't think that we're disputing that. But where the challenge comes in is if you're going to show good faith, but the policy is you can do anything for any reason, well, then how do you show good faith? Because typically, you know, a good faith would be, well, you're not lying, you're stating your truth. But if you're not lying, then don't you need verifiable facts? But the minute you get into this issue of verifiable facts, then you get into cause, which is the slippery slope that Robin alerted the group to in the open meeting. And while I agree with her that the spirit is that we, you know, there should be complete flexibility in whether or not to remove a board member, in order for this indemnity to work, we have to show some sort of minimal process. And we have to show that people aren't acting out of malice, some sort of malice. That's how I look at this. And I think others in the group, we've talked about this before, would agree. So I would say that I think that is the temperature of the group. But what I'm wondering is maybe I should reach out to Sam and just say, you know what, I wasn't in these discussions in Workstream 1. I'm coming in this new, good or bad, as a counsel. Given the drafting conflict, maybe there's some general advice she can give us for drafting as well. But again, I didn't want to like supersede the group in this, and I wanted to know if you thought it was a good idea and I should proceed, or you think we should kind of just muddle through and then send it all to ICANN Legal. I'm happy to hear like from a process perspective, which you think might be better.
This is Thomas again.
Yes,
no,
Thomas.
I mean, if there are more hands, move to the other side, please.
No, Thomas, you've been the vocal hand up. And Cheryl has Cheryl has cited in the chat. Yeah, Cheryl just posted in the chat, that could be a nice informal approach, Lori, which I'm always in favor of informal approaches until we actually get to the final report, the draft report, when that, of course, would be final. But to get to a good draft report that isn't going to cause anybody a heart attack, I think it might be a good idea. So I'm sorry, go ahead, Thomas.
No worries. And I do agree with Cheryl. I mean, how could I dare to not agree with Cheryl, or how could anyone dare not to agree with Cheryl? No, I guess that, you know, if you reach out to ICANN Legal informally, share the results of the conversation with this group, and then pass on a formal request to them once the report is ready, or the draft report is ready, I guess that's exactly the way you should do things. Just, you know, I hope that you haven't discussed this for too long earlier, but getting back to the question that you asked earlier on how you can act in good faith without having any procedures in place, I guess it's exactly what we've put down in Workstream 1 that sort of starts describing the process. Maybe to add a little bit of history to this, when we began discussing the board member removal community power, there was just, you know, we can throw them out at any time, period. And then we've defined a process whereby, you know, this is being publicly discussed, where the board member in question has the opportunity to go on record with their own version of what they think about this whole thing. And I guess that's sort of the process that gives fairness and transparency to also bring to surface the position of the concerned board member. But ultimately, I do agree, and I said this in Hyderabad, there doesn't have to be any reason or any cars from a list of cars in order to get rid of a board member. And I guess that what we're looking for in this exercise with this group is to set out some guidelines. And if these guidelines are being followed, then the SOAC chairs who bring forward the request to remove a board member do not run the risk of facing liability issues or losing their indemnification. So I guess when you talk about facts, you know, one of the things that we could say, and again, if you've discussed this earlier, I apologize, that, you know, they should not bring forward any inaccurate facts, that if they bring forward facts, that those facts need to be evidence or supported by either witnesses or supporting documentation. And if there is no ground for removal that can be evidence, and that then it would be good enough to say, well, we just think that this is not the right person for us. And that is a value judgment, which I think, you know, as long as you don't cross the border of slander or, you know, discrediting a person, would also be fine. So another part of that could be that the language used in formulating the request should be such that does not insult or otherwise discredit the board member in question. So I hope this was not too long. Thanks for bearing with me. I'll go back on mute.
No, that was not too long. And Bernard has very, very patiently had his hand up. So Bernie, it's you.
Thank you. Just a few points. You mentioned at the start of the call that maybe staff could edit the document in real time if we go into a drafting mode. We usually don't do that, just to be clear.
Okay.
We'll take some good notes, and we can help you after the fact. But it's been generally the experience going around that live editing with a bunch of people is a real bad idea on these documents. Secondly, just a note relative to Sam. I'm fairly certain that she'd be very happy to talk to you. We've been talking to her with other groups, and ICANN Legal is there to help us. And as Sam has explained to a variety of people, including the co-chair since we began Workstream 2, it's really a different environment now that the bylaws have been changed and there's a lot less potential for conflict. So I believe if you want to reach out to her, you will be welcome and you will get some great advice.
Well, that's super helpful. Thank you so much. And I understand why real-time drafting could be difficult, although it's such a small group, but I get it totally. So thanks. And then I'm going to put that on my to-do list to reach out to Sam in the coming weeks just to have an informal conversation to see if she has some, you know, broad ideas about how to put the drafting in a way that won't circumvent the agreement in Workstream 1, but at the same time, going back to Thomas's point about, you know, if you are asserting something based on fact, that those facts are true, and, you know, is it enough to just say they're true? You know, would it be enough to have some sort of affidavit saying, I'm telling the truth? Or, you know, do we want to do something like, well, if you're asserting facts, then we need evidence that those facts were investigated? I mean, those are the kinds of questions that I think that this group would want to look at in terms of process. So what I would ask now is, I had said to the group, if I could keep this call to 30 minutes, I would endeavor to do so, give people back some time. But Yvette, if you could put up the last draft with the annotations and Sam's comment, maybe we can use the last 15 minutes here to make some solid suggestions about where we need to go with the draft and, you know, what are some of the open questions. And, you know, based on the feedback that I heard, you know, sitting in on the Hyderabad meeting remotely, which was not the best, but it was as good as I could do at the time, and feedback that I got once I was on the ground in Hyderabad, what I'm thinking is that this draft, first of all, in Section 2, the ABC, per Sam Lanfranco's connotation, maybe we don't need an ABC in number 2. I mean, maybe we just take all that out, because if you, what the concern from the ground was, well, if you establish expectations, transmit expectations, clarify the expectations, that in fact you may be creating cause I don't know, honestly, that I agree with that, because I think in C2C, it says, you know, you clarify that any expectations are in addition to any cause that may be brought forth without limiting cause. I mean, that's a legalistic way of saying, and maybe we just need to say that, clarify that the expectations are in addition to being able to remove a board member for any reason at any time. I mean, maybe the solution is to either take out the legalistic language, and I apologize for that. I'm an American trained lawyer, and I speak legalese, and as much as I try not to sometimes, it creeps in. So my suggestion would be to consider maybe just removing A, B, or C, or maybe changing C to say what I just said, clarify that SOAC expectations are in addition to any reason at any time. Now, I want to get some feedback on that from people. All right, absent feedback, I'm going to keep talking a little bit and say why I'm sticking a little bit to this idea of expectations. If we say a board member can be removed at any time for any reason, and it could just not be the right person, looking at it from a governance perspective, from the board member's perspective, is it fair to the process that the board member gets appointed but doesn't really have any idea of what the expectations might be? Or do we understand that the NomCom process that the board members already went through has already established that? I don't know, but I think to appoint somebody to the board and say, well, we can remove you at any time for any reason, I mean, isn't the natural question from the board member, well, what do you expect from me? You know, I feel like there should be some guidance here. And yes, I understand that the guidance isn't cause, but the guidance could be helpful to my good representation of your interests. I see that Cheryl's typing into the chat. I see the point raised on that cause issue raised by Sam, and see that just a modified 2C can work from becoming A, and I don't see the rest yet. Becoming A.
And I've got my hand up. I'll talk to that
Cheryl.
When you get to me. It's all right.
All
right. Alan has his hand up first.
Yeah, Alan's first in the queue. Yes, Alan, go ahead.
Yep, thank you. I'm not sure it's an issue of fairness, to be quite honest. Under California law, board members can be removed, period.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes with the job, so to speak. And yes, any board member probably should do their best to make sure that they have a feeling for what it is the community expects of them. They may choose to follow it or not, but I would think that... I think the right word here is it behooves them to try to understand, but I don't think there's an obligation that it be set out in black and white before them. Being a director of a corporation in California of the type we are says you can be removed, and that's so it just comes with the territory, and I think that's part of what you accept when you go into the job, and to whatever extent you can lay the groundwork to understand what your community accepts or what the community expects of you, then you're so much better off. But I don't think we can change the overall ground rules. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Cheryl?
Great. Cheryl, for the record. And I accept everything Alan just said in terms of what California law does and doesn't have in its capacity on that. The same situation of ignorance, however, could be raised, even the nominating committee process, which does in fact outline to all of its applicants and interviews based on the ability to ensure that the potential appointments do have a clear and unambiguous understanding of their rights, responsibilities and risks, doesn't go into that particular part of Californian law. So it may be a surprise to a number of them that that is the case, unless they're familiar with Californian law. So there's always that risk of, oh, hey, I didn't know. And it's the "oh, hey, I didn't know" excuse that I guess would be debated should ACRSO not at any point in time make clear to their appointments what the expectations are of them. And you know what? I think that's the problem for the AC and the SO to sort out if and when that happens. What I was trying to say in my text earlier on, it should have had a capitalised A at the end, so it's not "a," it was changed, the C modified in some way to be just the A. And so I was agreeing with you, Laurie, to remove the current A and B and then just, you know, shift it up in the formatting. It really is, I guess, current practice for most, if not all, of the ACs and the SOs to give at least some sets of expectations to their aspirants for sitting on the board. It certainly is the case for the nominating committee, and if that stops being practiced, well then, you know, more fool them.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Oh, Alan's hands up again. Alan?
Yeah, I guess I want to do a level set of the world we're looking at. It's pretty hard to imagine in any of our SOs or the ALAC, who are the ones who are going to appoint board members, that this would creep up with absolutely no notice or no heads up that it's coming. You know, I can, for the ALAC to remove a board member, that board member would have to be acting in a pretty egregious way, and I would suspect that's the same in any other group. Certainly within the CCNSO, if action were to be taken, it would have to be taken pretty publicly within the CCNSO and in fact within the larger group of CCTLDs. The same is true in the GNSO. The GNSO cannot act unilaterally without all of its stakeholder group and constituencies being involved. The same is true in ALAC. Yes, it could be done in secret if one tried really hard, but it's hard to imagine that. In the case of NOMCOM directors, there's going to have to be concerted action of multiple ACs and SOs. So none of this is going to creep up. There's going to be notice unless it is so egregious that everyone decides that we have to do this and we have to do it in secret. And, you know, secrets aren't kept that well in ICANN. So I think we're looking at a world where, yes, we need some formal process and we need to document what it is that will allow ICANN to indemnify you and not have legal action against you for taking this action. But it's not as if there's not going to be some warning and some discussion of this. It's just not believable in any real world that I'm living in.
Thank you, Alan. I would tend to agree, but as I said, I'm also reacting from some comments where that came from the floor that basically said, we can do what we want when we want at any time. And I think in a very broad sense that's true, but in a narrower sense, maybe not, you know, to your point, we need some kind of process, and maybe we focus on the process and not trying to establish a case per se. That could have been the underlying drafting sort of misunderstanding in the beginning. So what I'm wondering, really, from an editorial perspective, Alan, is your hand still up, or is that a
just one follow-on. Group, an AC or SO can, at any time without notice, remove a director or start the process. But the AC and SO deciding to do that is not something that's likely to happen overnight, or in most cases can't even happen overnight, because the group has to make the decision, not an individual.
Right, and that's
the part that is almost impossible to do in secret without notice, and surprisingly.
Right, and I think Yul had asked the question, and it's further up in the chat. Basically, doesn't the community have to decide? It can't just be one SOAC. And yes, that's exactly right. That an SOAC can decide that they're going to petition for removal, but they still need a coalition. They still have to find allies.
Not for their own director. They have to involve the rest of the ACs and SOs in a discussion but they don't need approval from them.
Okay, so that's my misunderstanding. So it's for all board seats, you need the coalition, but for SOAC seats, you just need the SOAC.
Yeah, for the NOMCOM, you need the coalition. For the others, you must involve the other ones in a discussion, but you don't need their approval.
Okay, all right. I think that nuance is not in these guidelines and probably should be, to clarify that point. And I agree with Sarah. She writes in the chat, still no chance of a secret, though. And so maybe really what we need to do also is to look back up at one, and maybe my suggestion would be here. And again, once we have the discussion and some sort of agreement within the group, I can go back and draft, I guess this would be the third draft of this. We're basically, maybe we change some language here to say like 1A instead of saying maybe for any cause, we could say maybe for any reason at any time, to take the causation language out. I think that would alleviate some of the issue around whether or not this is cause-based. And maybe in B, what we say to Alan's point, or and Cheryl's as well, if there is a reason given, that the reason itself then should be fact-based, and if it's verifiable, be able to verify it. You know, maybe that's how we do it. We make it a little looser than it is now, so we're not necessarily writing a writ, you know, a straight petition of a fact-based cause. And we leave it looser to say, yeah, you can do it for any time, but if you're asserting a particular fact pattern or behavior behavior not so much, but this is where I get a little confused from a drafting perspective. You just don't like the person. Like to Alan's analogy, they're wearing purple pants, so out, they're out. Now, in that petition, do we say they're wearing purple pants and we don't like purple pants, so you're out? Or does the petition just say, yeah, this isn't working? I mean, what degree of specificity? And I think this is maybe one of the questions that I should ask Samantha, is what degree of specificity do we need to assert in a position to alleviate any allegation of bad faith? That might be the better question. Bernie.
I think Bernie's had his hand up for a while.
Yeah, Bernie. I called on him. Bernie.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Alan.
I'm sorry, Bernie. I tend to look at the participants box, and if I'm overlooking the staff box, I appreciate the ping.
Oh,
staff
is used to being overlooked. It's all right.
No.
Heaven's sake.
That's horrible. Hey, I get it on the other end at INTA. I'm staff support at INTA, so I believe
yeah,
I
yeah.
get it.
Okay, so we understand each other. Just joking aside here. Just 2 points. The first point Alan made quite well. The difference between removing a director that's nominated by an SO or an AC or a director that's nominated by the nominating committee is not insignificant. Second, you were talking about process, looking more at process versus causality. And I think that that's interesting. And you may actually, if you have not done so, I don't know if you have, but the process is described to a fair level in the Workstream 1 work, and possibly could use maybe some refinements from this group to meet the requirements we're trying to achieve. So I don't know if that's of any use to you, but that could be an interesting path to follow and would dovetail nicely with what we have already. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany. So you're suggesting that we go back to the Workstream 1 report, because I have read, and I did read the report, but I'll be honest, I've read it now months ago. I would have to go back and refresh now. And I have read the bylaws actually quite closely in terms of this bifurcated process between, but I didn't remember about the coalition versus non-coalition, about the bifurcated process between all board seats, you know, NOMCOM versus SOAC. So, we might want to think about how that bifurcation works, even from that process level, because there are different mechanisms inside the bylaws depending on which route you're going with a petition of removal. So I'm happy to follow that suggestion and go back to the Workstream 1 report and at least definitely look into the Part 1, you know, for all board seats. What does this look like? But do you think then, and I want to ask the group, do you think then based on sort of the different issues we're addressing here, do we need to even further break this out one more time and say for all board seats, for NOMCOM seats, for SOAC seats? Do we think we need to go that deep? We could still keep this brief and high level. I mean, we're still only at one page for our entire policy at the moment, so I'm not worried about length. I'm worried about whether or not it makes sense and that we're not really, again, I really don't want to be open to any sort of suggestion that we're trying to work around Workstream 1 because we're not, and we know we're not. So it's just a question of creating an understanding so everybody understands where we're headed on this. So do you think there could be a meaningful way to distinguish all board, NOMCOM, SOAC? Alan?
I don't really think there's a need to differentiate. Clearly, if it's NOMCOM, there are more people casting aspersions on the director because more than, you know, several different ACs and SOs have to take formal action to say that director should be removed and to state the rationale. And clearly, the discussions will be more public and more open in that case. Whereas in the case of a single AC and SO, I am obliged to raise it with the others. They can totally ignore me. And I've met my bylaw obligations by having raised the issue with them. Whereas clearly in a NOMCOM director, they're going to have to actually take action. Some of them will have to take action if it's to be affected. But I don't think the ground rules are different.
Okay. Bernard? Do you prefer Bernie or Bernard? I'm sorry.
I've been called so many things. I really don't have a problem.
Mr. Turcott. Mr. Turcott. I recognize you from the floor.
Thank you. Just an observation here. Going back to the process versus cause. For me, it resonated quite a bit when you were talking about it's not, we all agree there doesn't have to be a reason. But given the reality, as Alan has mentioned, of what SOs and ACs are by their very nature, there will be discussions and there will be documents written and there will be tracks. And I think it's about helping the SOs and ACs understand which level of discussions, recordings, and documents they're producing, which ones they do need to produce, and how they need to produce them, and what they need to watch out for when entertaining such discussions, and how these get presented. This is even probably more of an issue when you're trying to remove a non-com director and you've got, usually I guess we'll start with one or two SO or ACs that are trying to convince some other SOs and ACs. And I think if you go through the process from Workstream 1 that's been elaborated, it's a very mechanical process about, well, you need to write to these other SOs and ACs. You need to state your case, you need to do this, you need to do that. So it's all the mechanics that will lead you to a vote that will allow the empowered community to make a request to remove the director. I think what's missing, to few in here will laugh when I say this, I'm sure, is the depth and color to those rules about where you should step and where you should not step as an SO and AC to maintain the immunity.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I understand what you, yeah, that makes sense. So I think you're right. I think we kind of get our heads out of whatever the reason may or may not be and go to how do you document it in a way that creates a sufficient case, for lack of a better word. But let's think of a better word, because I'm trying to stay away from cause, case, matter, because these are the legal buzzwords that seem to really tick a lot of the community off. And that's not what we're here to do. To Bernie's point, we're here to enable and here to help.
Yeah, and that's exactly
so
it.
I think
Yeah, the people, I think, you know, worked inside SOs and ACs for a number of years. And, you know, when you're sitting around a council table and you've got some of these horrible cases that come up to you as the leadership of an SO and AC, the first thing you want to do is pull out the rule book and see what are the do's and don'ts and which I's you have to dot and which T's you have to cross before you even start talking about this. And, you know, that's what we don't have. As I said, we're stream one. We developed the mechanics. You know, you will climb the stairs, you will turn right. But it doesn't give the additional requirements of the expertise in this group and yourself. I really think there is a lot here. But it's a question of how to look at this problem so that you know, and maybe that's not the only thing this group can do, but this group could really help by providing, if you will, the playbook for the SOs, ACs, depending on how they're going. And these playbooks may be different for some groups versus other ones, but that could really, really help everything along for everyone. And that's my suggestion. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's a really good suggestion. And of course, as the rapporteur, it's my responsibility to take up the pen, and I'll certainly look at work stream one transcripts more carefully to get this guidance that Bernie has highlighted. But is there anyone here in the group who would like to offer a volunteer? I know you're all in other groups. I know Cheryl particularly, she's co-chairing another group, I believe, our co-rapporteur. To really start thinking about this and start posting on the list some ideas about what that playbook might look like, just even randomly, coming from the place of being a leader of an SO or AC, that would be super, super helpful. I mean, I can certainly take a stab at it again, like I did with this first draft, because I think we needed something to get the ball rolling. So we have the something to get the ball rolling. But now I agree. I think we need to get on to another level, and the level should absolutely be process-based. Can I just have a consensus that you agree that's the way to go, that we really need to dial down the language on cause and dial up the idea that this is about process? Could have a show of hands for those who are on call, or just if anybody disagrees, let me know, like in the next 30 seconds, or I'll consider we'll have some kind of consensus on that's where we should be heading.
I'm happy to agree, Laurie, but I'm not at the IC room at the moment.
Okay, great. Okay, Alan? Was that a closing
statement,
an agreement, or more comment?
No, a comment.
Okay.
It's a comment Cheryl has heard in a different group, that putting together process at our level is really difficult for an ACs and SOs, because each of the ACs and SOs are very, very different beasts, make decisions in very different ways, and socialize things with their members in different ways. So I think you maybe want to be careful about trying to go too far into process when we're talking about things within ACs and SOs.
Okay.
I say that in the other group, the ACSO accountability group, as Cheryl well knows, we tried, and it ends up falling apart. So just be careful.
All right. That's noted.
Laurie. Yeah, I recognize that, but I think if we keep at the very high-level part of the playbook, you know, not into the deep and meaningful process, to go back to Bernie's desire to note that, you know, councils and committees do
feel more comfortable if they can look at a reference point. Even if it's just a Cliff Notes version, it would be nice to attempt something. Thanks.
Right, I understand that. And I think we kind of got to that a little bit in 2D, where it just says develop procedures, your own procedures. I mean, we recognize that each SO and AC will have their own procedures, but as long as they have procedures, that I think is important. And then I know Bernie's hand is up, but I'm going to also just reinforce something. Bernie said that for the all, you know, for the SOAC nominees, whatever the SOAC decides to do with your nominee, God bless, right? That is... that's an internal SOAC issue, and we don't want to monkey with that. But for all board seats, there should be, I would think, some sort of common language or commonly understood frame of reference, pattern of collecting data that makes sense so that coalitions can be built if they need to be built. And now I'm going to call on Bernie. Oh, now he's agreeing. Okay.
Oh,
do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, the it's to Alan's point. I was in no way thinking that it would go into that kind of detail and more along what you were talking about, Laurie. I think it's a question of some very high level points that basically apply across all the SOs and ACs when they're considering this kind of action. It's not about you're going to have to call a meeting of this RALO, or you're going to have to deal with this subcommittee in this way. I think, you know, we will be forever at this if we go down to that level. But the point is, there are some common threads at a very high level, which will meet the requirement of what we're trying to do here of do's and don'ts when you're going down this path.
Okay. Well, I think that makes sense. And so we have some to-dos. Maybe, Yvette, as you're taking notes, I haven't really read the notes carefully, but so I guess the next to-dos would be, number one, to reach out to Sam Eisner, which I'm happy to do. Number two, that all of us, if we have time, but me especially as reporter, to read the Workstream 1 report again with a closer eye to pulling out what could be memorialized as some sort of high-level process. And then three, to take the suggestions we have about changing this draft and do so. And so basically submit a version, I think this is a version 2 or 3. I can't remember if I did 2 versions of this or 1. I kind of feel like I've been at this twice already. So I think it's the 3rd version, where then we can get together. And I could certainly promise to do my part, probably by Christmas. That's a month away to get a meeting. I'll be traveling, just so you know, for 2 weeks. I have 2 weeks of intensive travel coming up, 1 week being the IGF. So I may see some of our colleagues on the ground in Mexico. But I have 2 meetings in Brussels next week. So that would put us into the middle of December, where we to schedule another call. And it looks like our normal time is being used by the plenary this time around. So, if people feel like, I felt today's conversation was especially helpful, to be honest. It was one of the more productive ones I think we've had. So would you like to have another one or try to squeeze one in before the end of the year? Or is the group happy to have these follow-up items, and we stay online and then resume our meetings after January 1, which is 6 weeks away? But again, I just want to hear if you think it's helpful, or do you think we have enough? If we start drafting and posting to the list, we can get things done. Bernie?
Thank you. Yes. I just wanted to note, as you're going through the Workstream 1 processes for removing directors, I'm intimately familiar with them. So if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me, and I'll be glad to answer any questions if I can.
That would be great. I mean, maybe that's the first start. Maybe you and I can just schedule a call together. We could talk a little more. I'll read the report, and if I have questions, maybe set aside some time where I can just have some questions to ask. Might be helpful.
whatever we can do to help, we're there for that.
Yeah, okay. And what about the rest of the group in terms of calls between now and the end of the year? Do you feel another call, one or two calls would be necessary? Do you think we could carry on online?
Laurie, Cheryl here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I've just got back to the IC room. What are the date options, Bernie? Would we be obviously in the week of the 14th or something? Is that about right? 1900 on the 14th, is that our next option?
Let me look. I'm in December right now. We've got quite a few slots open.
Should do one out of our normal cycle, you know?
Yeah, there's the week of December 5th has quite a few open slots. And
that's too soon, and Laurie's going to be traveling.
Yeah, I'm going to be in IGF, and I have a feeling that's going to take, like, a lot of my... I ended up going from just being observer to being involved now in two different workshops, so I don't want to commit to that.
Monday the 12th of January. Monday the 12th of December is completely open right now, if you're looking around that time. And after that, it gets into the week of the 19th of December, and that starts being a little rougher.
Christmassy.
Yeah. Well, but our normal slot being a UTC Wednesday 1900, is that open in the week of the 10th? Which I think is the 14th.
I think that's when the plenary is.
No, we currently reserved December 14th, 1900.
That's
UTC
the one.
Is currently
I think that's
reserved.
The one to keep. I think
All
that's
right,
the one to keep, Laurie.
Okay, so let's keep that one. If that would be great. Let's keep that one, and then I think we have scheduled all the meetings in January. I think Yvette and I went over that earlier. In a few weeks ago, if I recall correctly.
Yes, there are guideline reservations in January, indeed.
Good. Okay, that's good then. All right, so we'll do the 14th of December, and then we'll resume after the new year. Make sense, folks?
Excellent plan.
Yeah, I know that I said I'd keep it to a half hour, but oddly enough, we got into a level of discussion here that I think was super helpful in setting the course. So I want to say thank you to everybody. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to offer, any other business? Because at least I can give you 11 minutes back, if not 30. As I said, I will agree to lift the heavy oar, as they say, no problem. But if people could really look back at Workstream 1, even for a few minutes, just and either offer me privately or offer to the list any suggestions so I can start collating it into another version of the guidelines. I see I called it annotated first draft. All right, so then we'll call whatever's going forward the second draft. I think I considered the annotation the second draft. Yeah, Alan's at IGF. Lido, did you have something you wanted to say, or you were typing? I thought I saw something on the list, but maybe not. We had asked, Lido, if you're listening, I had asked for some board input. I thought that that was fair, quite honestly, that we're in the process, point of the process now where, yes, to the point we raised earlier in the meeting, maybe the issues of establishing expectations and fairness in terms of certain cause is not warranted based on the Workstream 1 report, but I still think it's in the issue of transparency and fairness, if the board does want to put some input and suggestions into this draft, that now would be the time to do it. As we're having these, you know, baseline discussions about where we think this is going to go, and I know that Rinalia had posted to the list earlier that we would have something from the board either at or shortly after Hyderabad. So I just want to kind of put that in your ear again, Lido. If you're not able to speak, I see your mic is muted, but if you know, if you want to comment to that or comment to the list, that would be really helpful.
Thank you, Laurie. I just wanted to say I was typing that I think it has been a good discussion. I've been listening very carefully. So I've been saying some things at the board level, but I think the discussion goes well. I think everybody's agreeing with most of what has been done so far. So I think we're in good shape. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Lido. That's nice. Well, then I'll wish everybody, whether you're American or not, a very happy Thanksgiving, because we're living in a crazy time with a lot of unexpected and a lot of crazy events in this world. But I think it's always good to take a moment and count our blessings. And I think this type of community involvement and these great discussions are a blessing. And I just wish everybody a happy and healthy holiday, whatever you celebrate. And I look forward to speaking to you in 2 weeks. 3 weeks.
Thanks, Laurie. Safe travels,
my
dear. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.